the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. This week, we want to cover a topic that is impacting more and more retirees: enjoying your retirement without the stress of financial hardship. Now, today's show was prompted by a number of reports, including a report this week that's impacting many seniors today. And Jim, the stats are just alarming. In fact, according to the Wall Street Journal, bankruptcy filings are surging among older Americans. Filings for bankruptcy for Americans age 65 and older has more than tripled since 1991. So for today's program, we're going to talk about various metrics and even strategies that can hopefully help you avoid this fate. And we hope it'll give you more confidence in your financial situation. So we'll go over some options that can lead to a more secure retirement. Jim, let's begin with the number of reports that are out this week and their meaning, and then let's talk about ways to avoid many of these serious issues.
You know, this was really surprising, and you're starting to see a lot more articles about this, Chris, and the reason being is we have 10,000 baby boomers heading into retirement every single day, and that will probably continue into the next decade. So it's naturally, there's more stories about what does this mean for Social Security, what does it mean for Medicare, and then you hear a lot of these stories. But the Wall Street Journal did a series of reports that were fabulous this week. One highlighted, which is more seniors are filing for bankruptcy. Now, as you mentioned, it has tripled since 1991. Of the individuals that file for bankruptcy each year, 12.2% are roughly in the ages between 65 and 74. Now, there are many reasons given for why this number is increasing. One obvious factor is, we talk here on the program so often, is people are actually living longer. The life expectancy is almost increased by nearly 20 years if you take a look at the last 60 years. When they put Social Security in place in the 30s, a male was expected to live to age 65. Today, the average expectancy is somewhere in the 80s. So life expectancy has extended. So your savings carry you a lot more years as longevity in society increases. Now, another reason they also gave was the reductions in safety net programs, including Social Security and Medicare, as being the main two. Now, if you are on Medicare, and depending on your income, since 2005, when we passed Medicare Part D, Medicare went to a tiered pricing system. There are actually four different prices you can get billed for on your Medicare depending on your income. And not only is those prices going up, the government is covering less of your medical expenses. Now, what does that translate into? It means that you usually have to have something called Medigap insurance, which picks up what Medicare doesn't cover. Well, the less and less the government covers, that means your insurance premiums are going to go up a lot more. The final explanation is the shift from defined benefit pension plans that guaranteed a fixed pension to 401k programs that leave it up to you, the worker, to decide how much to save and how to invest, with workers bearing the risk for investment returns. Now, if you are a state or municipal worker, you probably still have a defined benefit pension plan, but as we talked last week on the program, you're going to see those go away in the next decade. But when we were in that era in the corporate life, mom and dad went to work for a company. They put in 25, 30 years. They got their Timex watch. They usually got a pension that was about 70 to 80% of their income, very much like you see in the government sector today. Well, corporations got to the point where they simply couldn't fund those pension obligations, so they switched it over to 401k programs, which leaves the onus of your retirement on you. you bear the risk, and the result is most Americans are underfunded and underinvested when it comes to their own retirement.
Well, Jim, I'm really glad we're covering this today. I know a lot of our listeners are thinking about this issue. And the article from the Wall Street Journal that you referenced, which was just this last Tuesday, mentions that the rate at which Americans age 65 and older are filing for bankruptcy has more than tripled since 1991. So it's a big deal. We know folks are concerned. So based on that, Jim, what would you say a potential retired couple or individual, or even someone who just retired, what do they need to do in order to avoid these difficulties?
You know, Chris, it usually begins with what we call in the business, finding your number. That's the amount of assets you will need to last you throughout your retirement years. Now, here's the difficult part. That number has gotten larger over the years because, as we mentioned, we're all living longer. So the number needs to be bigger because it's going to have to cover you over a longer period of time. Another reason this number needs to be bigger is due to two additional factors. This is clearly evident when you look at the markets today. Investment returns are lower, so you need more money. You know, gone are the days when you used to get 6-8%. Chris, when I got in the business, you were making 18% on money market funds. Banks paid double digits on CDs. And on top of that, if you rolled over your CDs, they probably gave you a Vegematic or a toaster. But those things went away at the end of the 80s when Greenspan brought interest rates down. But interest rates were fairly steady in the 6-8% range in the 90s. And then we got to the big blow up of the tech bubble. And that's when the Fed brought interest rates down to 1%. And then in the next financial crisis, they brought them down to zero. So interest rates on safe investments, things like treasury bills, government bonds, corporate bonds, are much, much lower today than they were, let's say, 20 years ago. So the consequence is you need more money to get a return or to supply your retirement needs. A second reason is medical expense inflation is going up for seniors on an average of about 6% a year. And as I mentioned, the government is covering less and less of those expenses, with the average couple. Now, when I say average, and I mean that because depending on what tier you are in when it comes to Medicare premiums, the number could actually get bigger. But Fidelity does a study every single year, and they take the out-of-pocket expenses that a couple will expend over their, let's say, life expectancy during retirement. And that number is $265,000. Now, let me explain what that is. That includes your Medicare premiums, your Medigap insurance, and your out-of-pocket expenses. You may have a particular illness or ailment where you have to take a particular drug. That drug isn't covered by Medicare or only partially, so you're going to be shelling out of your pocket. Certain formularies on your Medigap insurance may not cover some of your drugs, so you have to pay more. And out-of-pocket expenses. So this is taken for a couple, two people, over, let's say, a 20 to 25-year period. So if you take that into consideration, $265,000, that averages roughly to about $10,000 to $12,000 a year. And most people simply don't put that in their budget, or they're not thinking of that when they retire. So if you take all three of these factors into account, life expectancy, lower returns, and also higher medical expenses, the number you need to reach with, let's say, your savings and investments in order to avoid financial difficulties and avoid going broke or bankruptcy, as the Wall Street Journal study this week pointed out to, that number, Chris, needs to be a lot bigger.
Well, with that being the case, Jim, that is clearly a huge number. What are some helpful planning guides that a couple or an individual can start with You obviously, we don't want to overwhelm listeners, but where can they start? Something that can set them on the right path or tell them if they're actually ready and able to retire.
You know, I hate to say this, and most people aren't going to like what I have to say, but it starts with a realistic budget for retirement that includes the extra expenses, for example, travel, entertainment, or any hobbies that you may have or take up or spend more on. We always budget, Chris, when we do a financial plan and a couple does their budget, we always add an additional $10,000 to $12,000 annual medical expenses. Now, even though you might not need it during the early years, you better be putting aside an extra $10,000 to $12,000 in a kitty, because I can tell you, as you get into your late 70s, your early 80s, as those Medicare premiums increase, Medigap insurance increases, and your medical illnesses increase, you're going to need that money. So when you arrive at that number, whatever that budget number is, the next step is you can look at all the sources of income you're going to have to meet that, let's say, monthly budget, whether it's Social Security, pensions, or investment income. And that should tell you right there if you have a shortfall or if you need other sources of income to supplement your retirement. Now, I want to point out here a serious flaw with advisor planning software that we override when we do our own retirement plans for clients, because most of this software is, when they're taking a look at your number, they're using historical returns that bear no relation to the reality of the 21st century. They are based on returns over a 50 and 100-year period when interest rates obviously were much higher and the stock market returned 10% on average over an extended period of time. So if you're using 10% returns for the stock market or 6 to 8% returns for the bond market, which are the historical returns, those numbers bear no resemblance in reality to anything that we've seen over the last couple decades. And so that could leave you in a false sense of security if those kind of returns are factored into your plan, because what it's going to do, it's going to overstate your investment returns and it's going to understate the amount of money you need to safely retire. Let me give you an example of this. If you take the two bear markets in the last decade, where stock prices basically went nowhere for 13 years, and that's right, the stock market peaked in March of 2000. It hit a low in the summer of 2002. It went back up for 5 years until the fall of 2007. Then it fell again in the bottom of March of 2009. So it was not until you actually got to April of 2013 that the stock market finally exceeded the highs that were first reached in, let's say, March of 2000. So if you were, let's say, had all your money in an index fund, you were drawing down money to live on for 13 years, you got zero returns on stocks. And if you look at interest rates, and this is the one where a lot of people put a lot of their money when they retire, they want to be safe. We hit the lowest interest rates in recorded human history in over 5,000 years. 20 years ago, Chris, if somebody retired, it was very easy to get 7, 8% return on corporate bonds, maybe 6% on sovereigns. That simply isn't possible in today's investment climate, even when you look globally. So with interest rates this low, you simply need more capital to provide a safe return.
Well, Jim, this reminds me of the subject we covered last week with the coming reductions that are coming to state, municipal, and federal pension plans. Most of these plans assume a 7.5% return, and they're getting nowhere close to that in reality. You know, it's, when you look at market declines from 2000 and 2008, it really showed the dangers of folks that are in sort of do-it-yourself retirement plans. Many 401k participants, they cut back on their contributions and they shifted money out of stocks, never put them in, withdrew money to pay bills. And you were talking about how much money usually goes toward medical bills. So what you're saying here is make sure the investment returns you use to reach your retirement return is based on realistic assumptions. Also, we do need to remember that we do get bear markets where the market can lose anywhere from 40 to 60% of value, and that could devastate your retirement if it occurs during the early years. So, Jim, what are some other issues that folks should be considering to reach what you referred to as their number?
You know, Chris, there are two other factors that need to be addressed, and you mentioned one of them. And that is sequence risk, which we've talked here on the program in the past. Basically, having to go through a major bear market, let's say at the beginning of your retirement, which would leave your finances devastated. You simply cannot afford to be drawing down your investment returns when the markets are falling 20 to 30% a year, as they did between 2000, 2002, in 2007 and 2009, because what generally happens in most retirement plans, let's just pick a number, and let's say that, and we'll just make this easy for illustration. Let's say your number was $1 million, and you're taking out 4% each year, so you're withdrawing $40,000. So what happens is you're on a liquidation. You're liquidating mutual fund shares or something that you're doing so you can meet that monthly check every single month. Imagine liquidating shares when the share prices are falling 20 or 30% a year. That is why one of the things that we always encourage our clients is to keep a cash cushion of 6 to 12 months in cash that you can live off during a bear market so you can stay defensively invested without having to sell off assets that are declining in value. Now, let me give you another thing that you also need. If you're heading into a bear market, that doesn't imply you get out of everything a market timer. That's the worst thing you can do. You still want to keep some blue chip stocks in your portfolio that you hold on even during economic downturns. These are usually companies like utilities, consumer staples, healthcare that are not subject to the whims of the economy and are not dependent on an economic recession. These are stocks that are blue chip. They are dividend aristocrats that have a history of raising dividends every year in good times, bad times. Now, the stock price may fall, but the dividends remain. In fact, if you're in a dividend aristocrat, they go up each year. Now, I like to tell the story of Coca-Cola, and it just illustrates the point. I by no means am recommending Coca-Cola stock or anything, but here's what I mean by that. In 2007, the stock of Coca-Cola was roughly about $30, $31. They raised the dividend that year 8%. In the year 2008, the shares of Coca-Cola went down like 10, 15%, but once again, they increased their dividend by 8%. Fast forward to March of 2009, the shares of Coca-Cola had dropped from $31 a share down to $20 a share, but once again, the dividend was raised another 8%. So during that period of time when the stock was falling, your dividends went up 8% every year. Now, the good news is when the bull market resumed, as the market bottomed in March of 2009, by the end of 2009, the shares of Coca-Cola were back up to $30 a share. Here's the important point. During that entire bear market, even though the share price might have dipped, your income increased every single year, and that is really important when you retire. So it's one of the reasons why if you do get in a bear market, you lighten up, You get more defensive, but it doesn't mean you go all into cash, because number one, that assumes two things. Number one, you're smart enough to pick the top of the market. And number two, you're smart enough to get in at the bottom of the market. And probably number three, you'll have the courage to get in at the bottom of the market. Because remember, when the market bottoms, the economic news is bad, the economy is in recession, people are losing jobs, the unemployment rate is up, corporate profits are down. The last thing you're thinking about is getting back into the market. And that's why you need the kind of steady security of some blue chip stocks, of companies that are less subject to the vagaries of the economy. Now, the other issue is inflation. And this is one of the big, what I call lifestyle killers of retirees. And I want to keep it simple by illustrating just one example. We're going to take three monthly income figures, $5,000 a month, $6,000 a month, and $8,000 a month. Now, what I did is I used a 4% inflation rate. The reason I did that is inflation is running about 2% right now. The average for healthcare is about 6, so I kind of averaged it out to 4. Now, let me go through the 5,000 figure. And the reason I'm going to go through all three, I want to illustrate and make sure I drive this point home. In year zero, you're getting $5,000 a month. With 4% inflation in 5 years, you'll need $6,000 a month for the same lifestyle. In 10 years, you'll need $7,000. In 15 years, you'll need $9,000. In 20 years, you'll need $11,000. And in 25 years, you'll need $13,000, almost 2.5 times what you started out in retirement. The next figure is $6,000. It goes from 6 to 7 in 5 years to 9 in 10, 11,000 in 15 years, 13,000 in 20 years, 16,000 in 25 years. And finally, the figure of 8,000, which is probably what you need if you live in California or on the East Coast. You start out with 8,000, it becomes 10 in 5. At 10 years, it's 12,000. 15 years, it's 14. In 20 years, it's 18. In 25 years, it's 21,000. So in all three of those cases and different income needs, by the end of your retirement, you're almost going to need 2.5 times what you started out with. So as you can see from this simple illustration, it is one of the reasons why you need to have some form of an inflation hedge in your plan and portfolio. I don't care whether it's dividend-paying stocks, rental real estate, or for some, it may be part-time work to supplement your income. You need to add inflation into the mix because your cost of living is going to be going up. And just try this. Look at what you're paying for gas, utilities, insurance, house repairs, medical expenses, and food cost over the last 10 years. Or what you're going to need, for example, when you eventually have to replace a car. So contrary to what you have been told, and retirement studies validate and support what I'm about to say, now this is going to shock you. Your stock component should be small at the time that you retire to avoid running into sequence risk at the beginning of your retirement and gradually increase over the years. So you have more assets and income to take care of you in your latter years when your medical costs will become a major portion of your budget, replacing travel and hobbies. It's just the opposite, Chris, of what people have been told, or the average thinking is, oh, I'll have more stocks when I retire, but then I'll gradually just phase those out. They use this rule, which it's a complete fallacy. The amount of stocks in your portfolio should go with your age. So at 65, you have 65% in stocks, and it drops every single year that you get older. It just doesn't work that way in reality.
Well, I'm glad you went through the inflation component, Jim, because I just don't think the average person is thinking about the impact that inflation has on retirement savings. But let's suppose that you go through this process. So you use reasonable conservative assumptions for investments. and you have a realistic budget, but you end up coming up short. What do you do then?
You know, the good news, Chris, is there are a lot more options that are available today through the planning process that can be used to solve this problem, depending on what suits your needs. But let's just go through a couple of these to give you hope. Number one, you can work longer, delaying retirement. So the longer you work, that gives you more years to save, gives you less years that you have to draw down assets. Number two, you can work part-time to supplement your income. I have a lot of clients doing that. Number three, you can downsize and use some of your home equity. Number four, which we're seeing a lot of our California clients do, is relocate to a cheaper state or locality where the cost of living is much cheaper. Number five, you can create your own private pension plan with an annuity so you never run out of money. And number six, you can delay taking Social Security to age 70, because from every year that you delay taking Social Security, your Social Security benefits go up by 8% a year, guaranteed. I know of no investment that can offer you that guarantee. So there's just way too many options to go through here, but I want to give an illustration of a client. He was a doctor. Been a client, three generations of planning. We started with his father, then we went, he became a client, and then we also working with his children. Now, his goal when he became a client in 1985 was to have $1 million when he retired. Now, if you think about it, back in 1985 on $1 million, I could have got a 14% rate of return in government Ginnie Mae's. Those were the good old days. So he was thinking, because his income was roughly about $150,000, that that's what he needed. Well, when it came time to retire at age 65, he actually had over $2 million in savings. But he wasn't ready to retire. He wanted also to be absolutely sure that he would be able to do the things that he wanted to do, which is number one, travel. Two of his kids lived overseas. One of his daughters was married to a petroleum engineer, so they moved him all over the world. So he wanted to do a lot of travel. His hobby was photography and sport cars. So what he chose to do, Chris, at age 65, is he got out of his practice and he was a part-time consultant and he worked part-time and his income was between $80,000 and $100,000. But what that allowed him to do was grow his portfolio, and fortunately for him, we were in a bull market, so that $2 million became $3 million, and he retired at age 70. He also delayed receiving his Social Security, so he got a larger Social Security check. So he is absolutely secure today, more so because he chose to delay his retirement. The point I'm wanting to make here is there's just too many options to go through. The important point is you need to have a realistic plan. And here's the sad part. Only about 20% of those retired have a plan. So it doesn't surprise me when I read this week that report in the Wall Street Journal about seniors filing for bankruptcy.
Well, one thing you mentioned, Jim, in terms of things you can do was maybe even to delay retirement. I'm remembering our interview we did with Lawrence Kotlikoff from last month, where he mentions that one of the number one things is consider not retiring yet. Every day you can put it off means you're not drawing down your retirement savings as fast. So if we were to sum all of this up, Jim, it looks like there's a handful of things that our listeners should be focused on. The first one, of course, is just have a plan. But number two, make sure that your budget numbers are realistic. So Jim went into a number of things like inflation and just making sure that as you're planning, that end number ends up being a realistic one. Number three, account for future medical expenses, which, as Jim noted, could be $265,000. And use realistic and conservative numbers for investment returns. Also, have an inflation hedge, and avoid sequence risk and asset drawdowns during bear markets. Lastly, keep a cash reserve for emergencies and bear markets. And I appreciate, Jim, you mentioning what you do personally in that regard. So it is time now for our real life case study. And this is hypothetical. It's an illustration that's based on real life examples, but names and circumstances have been changed so that privacy is protected. And for our listeners, you can always go online to financialsense.com to see the slides, and those slides illustrate the points that are being made here.
All right. Well, this case is Richard and Gina Blanchard. Let's talk about them. Richard is age 61, senior engineer. She is a nurse practitioner. If you're not familiar with a nurse practitioner, it's you almost have to, I believe it's a doctor's degree. Richard wants to work longer to save more money so they can enjoy a comfortable retirement. Kind of very similar to my doctor illustration I talked about. Gina wants to retire as soon as possible and take the family on vacations. They're taking a look at, they want a retirement plan because they want to make sure they know what their number is and that they can retire securely, because longevity runs on both sides of the family. And especially Gina being in the medical field, she's very much aware of what happens to medical expenses as you get older and age. Now, what's important to Richard? First of all, he wants to make sure of his number. In other words, what is going to be the number that is going to guarantee, or at least a high probability, that we will be able to enjoy retirement and not get ourselves into financial trouble later on? He wants to be able to retire in a few years. He's not ready to step down yet. And he wants to make sure when he does retire, he's going to have enough income to basically carry on and do the things they want to do, whether it's travel, take the kids on a cruise, and keep up with their hobbies. So that was from Richard's point of view. Now, what was Gina's view? She wanted to spend more time with her kids and grandkids. And she wanted to maintain a similar lifestyle. Nobody wants to work all their life. You get to retirement and the lifestyle that you were used to changes dramatically. And more importantly, she was probably a little bit more conservative than her husband. She wanted to make sure that their nest egg is protected because she saw what happened in 2007 and 2009 to their retirement savings plans because everybody got hit during that downturn. If you take a look at, here was the thing that was out of balance. Their risk score was 51. Their portfolio was 82, meaning that their retirement plans were very aggressively invested in the stock market. Not something you want to do if you're going to head into retirement. If you're 5 to 10 years away from retirement, you need to have a more balanced and conservative portfolio. Because just think what happened to those portfolios in 2000 or in 2007. So if we take a look at their income, $225,000, expenses of $130,000. So they were salting away a lot of money, about $95,000, certainly living within their means, given their sources of income. They could have certainly afforded a higher lifestyle. If we take a look at their assets, they had roughly about $750,000 in their home. Against that, they had about $200,000 in a mortgage that was still left. Their portfolio was almost $2.2 million with a net worth of $2.7 million. 81% of their portfolio was in the stock market, mainly in index funds and high growth funds, which was being a little on the aggressive side, and especially emerging market. And what I guess startled them a little bit is since the beginning of the year, a lot of those emerging market funds have done very poorly. A lot of that was the result of the rising dollar and rising interest rates here in the U.S. So if we sum up, the challenges were maximizing their income, reducing their risk, avoiding sequence risk. I cannot emphasize how important that is to begin your retirement. Imagine starting your retirement January of 2008, what you would have seen to your portfolio over the next year and a half. You want to avoid that. So protecting their nest egg was what we wanted to do. What we did is we shifted it over to a balanced portfolio that was probably closer to 60% fixed income. Now, here's the good news, is the yield on fixed income investments, especially now with the Fed raising interest rates, is much higher. I mean, you can get 3% in sovereign bonds. You can get 4 to 5% in what we call adjustable rate bonds. So you're able to get a higher return and still keep your money safe. And we did that for the retirement plans, which was the bulk of their assets. So what we did to reduce portfolio risk is reduce the exposure they had to the stock market and reallocate to more conservative portfolio with a focus on bonds and dividend-paying stocks. Maintaining their lifestyle, since already they were in pretty good financial position, you know, basically we said, look, just keep living with your inner means, salt away the next couple of years, and you know, you guys are going to be in great shape for retirement. Minimizing sequence risk, we did that by reducing the stock position, and may need to delay retirement to minimize sequence risk, especially if we go into a bear market in the next 2 years. I made them very much aware, and of course they are aware, of the Fed raising interest rates because they remember what happened to their retirement assets between 2007 and 2009. I said, you know what? It might be better to even get more defensive because we, you know, I'm pretty sure by 2020, if the Fed keeps raising interest rates, we're going to be in a recession. So to maximize retirement income, we changed the portfolio to reduce risk, and we had a little bit more of a cash position. And the plan was Richard wanted to work a couple more years anyway. And I said, Richard, that's perfect because what that does, it raises your Social Security income when you do take it. It goes up 8% a year. It allows you to build up assets and not touch them, which means less years to draw on. And it also allows us to be defensive during the next downturn. So, Chris, that's pretty much this week's case study.
Well, tomorrow's episode of Lifetime Income will be our third part of our three-part series on medical devices that can save your life. Jim will be speaking to Dr. David Albert, who is the chief medical officer from AliveCor, and he'll be talking about the CardioBand, which is a device that you attach to your phone or just put in your pocket. And about a third of the worst kind of strokes are detected with this device. So obviously, potentially saving someone's life.
Chris, we got a couple emails on some of these devices. I'm using all three. In fact, the cardio can be used with your Apple Watch. Turn it into EKG, but I'm using it with a Bluetooth remote blood pressure, and I'm using the Zona. I'm on week 4 using the Zona, and already my blood pressure has come down 5 points.
Now,
the program is 12 weeks long, so I'm in week 4. It's down 5 points, and they say you can get it down 20. So hopefully in a couple months, I'll be able to update everybody on how well these devices work. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.